Hi, I'm Anna Hoffman, and welcome to the first ever episode of Learn Live. We're super excited to be joining you here today, live from wherever you are, from wherever you are streaming today. My name is Anna Hoffman. I'm a data applied scientist on the Azure SQL team, and today I'm joined by Bob Ward. Bob, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thanks, Anna. I am Bob Ward. I'm a principal architect in Azure Data Team, famously now known as the person that presents with Anna Hoffman. That's kind of what I'm known as. So I'm here today with my partner in crime, Anna, to talk some Azure SQL. Pretty excited about it. Thanks, Anna, for having me.
Yeah, I mean, it's my pleasure. And we're so excited. This is going to be such a fun series. It's been a while since we've done this series. So I'd love to like take a step back. Today, of course, is introduction to Azure SQL. But there's actually much more than this to come. Bob, can you tell our viewers a little bit about like what we're doing here, how it happened, and how it's kind of evolved?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Anna, January of 2020, when was that? That seems like an age ago. You know, we were joining forces together. I'd spent time launching SQL 19. You spent a lot of time working with Azure SQL. I started on this journey. You know, Anna, here's a quick tip. Don't ask your boss, what can I do next? Not a good idea. Because your boss will tell you, here's what you can do next. And our boss, Asad Khan, said, Bob, I think you should spend some time in the clouds. Even though I had spent some time in Azure, take your experience with SQL Server and start assessing Azure SQL compared to SQL Server. Because a lot of people know who you are. They know you know SQL Server. They trust your judgment. They trust your knowledge. So that's what it was about. I was like, hey, I'll go assess SQL Server. And you kind of said, hey, I'm kind of working on this Azure SQL project. It'd be kind of fun if we joined forces. So that's kind of what led us to this whole concept of Azure SQL Fundamentals.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, when we look at the workshop that we've built, you know, you'll hear us call it different things, the Azure SQL Workshop, Azure SQL Fundamentals, Azure SQL Bootcamp. But really, I think a big part of it was being on top of the Microsoft Learn infrastructure. And, you know, Bob, do you want to share what's so special about Microsoft Learn? And that's that bottom left link here on the page, Azure SQL Fundamentals.
Hey, number one thing out of the gate, if you think about SQL Server, we always were able to do things for training-wise to say, hey, download Developer Edition on your laptop and just do our training, right? But as we started building Azure SQL, we thought to ourselves, huh, how are they going to do Azure SQL without paying for Azure SQL to do our training? We'd like to offer a free thing for you. And having this sandbox environment with the Learn team together is huge. Imagine now, Anna, going through these different modules that we've talked about and trying out what we're going to show you over the next 6 weeks and do it with not getting charged to your Azure subscription. So having that sandbox is so big. And then Microsoft Learn just has this amazing reputation for training at Microsoft. So being able to partner with them together to be on their platform and have that sandbox, I think it's just been critical and it's been immensely a part of the success we've had of all this training.
Yeah, definitely agree. And you kind of alluded to something that I'm not sure we've told everyone yet, and that's this is running for 6 weeks. So the next 6 weeks, we're going to be going module through module. So what you see here, and we're going to take you through all of Azure SQL Fundamentals. And we kind of think at the end of this, you might be able to pass DP300, which is our relational databases in Azure certification. So pretty exciting. And you know, when we look at these modules, Bob, can you tell us like how we came up with this order or these modules or why these items are what we consider the most important?
Sure. I mean, when we were doing this assessment, you were working on Azure SQL together. We're thinking to ourselves, how do we organize this? And it, ironically, we had both together started working on a what to use when type session at events, which led to this idea of like, we got to start off in the first module and talk about what is Azure SQL. Microsoft had pivoted to this branding of this term Azure SQL. So we need to kind of set the landscape and build the foundation for what are we talking about? What's the history of this? What is it all about? Why would you choose this, right? And then for me, being a SQL Server person, I thought to myself, okay, well, what is one of the first things you do? You have to install SQL Server. And so we together thought, well, let's talk about the deployment experience. How do you deploy Azure SQL? How do you configure it? And compare those experiences with a SQL Server perspective. And then I remember throwing this term to you. We were just talking online. We used OneNote. Remember all the OneNotes we built to go design all this? I said, Anna, we got to have meat and potatoes in there. And you're like, meat and potatoes? Like, what the heck? What is this Texan term you come up with? And it all deals with these topics in the middle, the heart of this. Security, performance, and availability are three critical parts of the SQL Server database engine. So why not take the concepts in SQL Server that apply to that and tell you in Azure SQL, how does that work? And so here we are. We have our five modules, and we started down the process of you know, going through all of this. And then I remember one specific meeting, you saying, well, there's got to be a way to put this all together, right? And I'm like, yeah, what do you have in mind? And so you were the one that came up with the idea of module six, putting it all together. So you should tell everybody, you know, when we get to the end of 6 weeks, what are you going to have?
Yeah, it's really exciting. At the end of the 6 weeks, you're going to be able to, like it says, put it all together. We've got some really challenging, exciting case studies that are going to bring it all together. And we're going to use like a social media campaign type of style to use hashtags and try to get you all to submit your solutions to the challenges that we pose at the end of all this. So I think it's going to be really fun. You know, I want to bring us back to today where we're going to be focusing on the first module, which is introduction to Azure SQL. So if you go to that aka.ms link, you're going to be able to find the actual module we're going through today. So we encourage you after this session or next week or whatever to go through this actual module so you can get a little bit into the details but understand we're going to be covering some of the same content. And finally, this is live and interactive. So want to encourage you to participate, ask questions on whatever streaming platform you're coming in through. We will be taking a look at what's coming up and what's being brought up to us. On YouTube, we're getting a lot of comments already. Some people are saying, you know, hey, this is exciting. Some people are saying, thanks for doing this. So we've got a lot of engagement already. So I'm just super excited for all of you to join us today. And let's go ahead and talk about Azure SQL. How does that sound, Bob?
Sounds like a great idea to me.
Awesome. So today we're going to be talking about Azure SQL. We're going to give you some background and history. Then we're going to talk about each of the deployment options. And we're even going to dive into the service tiers, compute tiers, and all that other good stuff you have to talk about. So you have to think about. So like Bob mentioned, this is really your what to use when type of session before we dive deeper into the meat and potatoes of Azure SQL. So I'd like to start off with this slide here. On the left, you have Ray Ozzie, who was the chief software architect at Microsoft at the time. He came to the Professional Developers Conference in 2008. So this was like Microsoft Build back then. And he got on stage and announced Windows Azure for the first time. And he did so with this slide that you're seeing here. Now, this is a really interesting slide to me because what is front and center? Microsoft SQL Services. So Microsoft SQL Services is how we kind of first made our step into the cloud. And the great thing about this and why I think it's so cool is from the beginning of Windows Azure, when you think about it, SQL Services or SQL Server has literally been at the center of our cloud. So it's evolved a lot since then, but it really started out at the center of what we were trying to do. And you know, Bob, over the years, I'm sure you've seen a lot of different things when it comes to Azure SQL and the evolution.
Yeah, thanks, Anna. First of all, I want to give a huge kudos to my colleagues, Anna. If you look at the bottom of these slides right here, these little dots are called breadcrumbs. So you see here, we're in the overview section. You kind of see where we're headed, right? As we go along these slides, we'll talk about Azure VM, MI, database, and comparison and summary. So what I love about this series is as we're presenting these in slide decks and slide format, every module has that look and feel. So you kind of know where we are in this discussion and where we're headed in the rest of the module. So Anna, you're right. I am a little bit of history buff. And I actually, admittedly, have been at Microsoft much longer than this timeline shows you. But I do remember being at Microsoft when all this started. And you think back to 2006, we embarked on these interesting projects at the same time. Red Dog being the Windows Azure team and CloudDB being the SQL team saying, how do we do services for things like compute and databases? And as you just mentioned, in 2008, at this Professional Developers Conference, we announced Windows Azure and SQL Data Services. Well, sometimes it's about branding. And so in 2010, we decided to come together when we actually launched the service. This was preview in 2008 to call it SQL Azure. In fact, many people today in the engineering team, if you talk to them, still use that term SQL Azure. Windows Azure being a term back then because Windows being the top brand at Microsoft. But notice, as you look at a little of this timeline, like even by the time 2012 came along, we were really what we were doing is servicing a database. And you're going to see the fruits of that in today's presentation of what is Azure SQL Database. So SQL Azure became Azure SQL Database. Now in 2013, there's a very important thing we did. And this interesting, the timeline is because it kind of aligns when Satya Nadella came along and was in charge of our server and tools business. And that is, prior to this time, we did not have a virtual machine offering that was stateful. You couldn't run SQL Server in the Azure virtual machine environment. So the launch of this was very important for the progress of Azure SQL, because now SQL became this primary workload because you had a disk drive all of a sudden to store SQL Server data. And then you see in 2014, we decided to rebrand Windows Azure to Microsoft Azure. Now, why would we do that? Because all of a sudden now, Azure became this platform, not just for running like Windows and SQL, but we're running all sorts of different types of compute and applications. Hundreds of types of apps were now showing up in the Azure platform. So why not call it Microsoft Azure? Because it wasn't just about Windows anymore, including things like Linux VMs, right? In 2015, we had a very, very important evolution to the platform of Azure SQL Database. We call that version 12. And that involved a new paradigm and an architecture that allowed us to get a lot more predictable performance and isolation to make sure customers that want to deploy Azure SQL Database could do that in a very, very performant way. And then kind of look as we march further here. In 16, we introduced something called Elastic Pools, which we'll talk about. We introduced something called a managed instance, Project Cloud Lifter. So instead of just a database, you're going to get now a PaaS service that's a SQL instance. And we're going to talk about what is the difference today between an Azure SQL database and managed instance. And in 2019 and 20 are all about us kind of just moving the game forward with things like hyperscale or serverless compute, or even things like instance pools. And finally, as we launched all of this last year, this branding that Azure SQL encompasses this family of infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. So Anna, it's a really long history. It's important to kind of see that evolution of what we've learned along the way. But perhaps the best way to really give everybody a feeling of what are we talking about is for you to talk about what is Azure SQL.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's actually a good segue into the Azure ecosystem. We did get one question. And this person says, how is being an Azure SQL DBA different from being a SQL Server DBA? And I think this might be a good lead into the Azure ecosystem.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, because you're right. Before we talk about Azure SQL, what the heck is Azure? What's that experience like? So if you're a SQL Server DBA and you've never used Azure before at all, you kind of have to have an account in this service, right? You need to have an account, a subscription to do things like deploy databases or instances. And often, what are you going to use? You're going to use the Azure portal, which comes in the forms of browsers or even applications on phone devices to go in and navigate things in a graphical way. You're going to see examples throughout all of our modules about the use of the Azure portal to do various things. Now, the Azure Marketplace is a series of products and services that you can subscribe to and purchase for Azure. Well, guess what? One of the marketplace items is Azure SQL. And we'll actually talk, I think, Anna, today at the end of this, kind of this unified experience we've built on how you can go find out Azure SQL services through the Azure portal, through the marketplace. Now, if you're kind of a programming person like me, you'd like to know APIs and command line interfaces. So Azure comes with a consistent set of command line interfaces and APIs that are consistent across many different platforms and available to you. Things like Azure CLI, the Azure CLI, which is available on Linux, Windows, and MacBooks, or PowerShell, or even just using APIs from a programming point of view. And so a lot of things are always based on APIs and CLIs, and you're going to find out that Azure SQL integrates and snaps into that ecosystem where we have specialized APIs and CLIs specific to Azure SQL. You're going to see this term called resource groups a lot in our presentations. And so behind the scenes, the Azure Resource Manager, or ARM, provides an infrastructure for services like Azure SQL to deploy and manage different various pieces. And so having that resource manager is critical. And usually what you see is something called a resource group and then resources within that group as an interface to what ARM is all about. Now, Azure Monitor is a platform for monitoring, and Azure SQL snaps into that. You will see demonstrations and examples throughout our modules about how we take Azure SQL and integrate with the overall Azure Monitor system to look at things like metrics and logs going on with your deployment. One of the decisions you're going to be making is where to deploy Azure SQL. In your data center today, you have known areas where you go put a SQL instance in a virtual machine. Azure is all over the world. There's so many regions, data centers, I've lost count. So you're going to make some decisions. Where am I going to deploy my Azure SQL resources in given data centers and regions around the world? Some of those decisions could be based on compliance regulations that you must adhere to in your country. And we'll talk some about that. And then finally, you would like to use this platform for a reason. And that is you would like compliance, you'd like trust, and most of all, you'd like a service level agreement. Wouldn't it be nice to go deploy an Azure SQL database and have guarantees of uptime based on agreement and a contract between what you have between us, between yourself and Microsoft? So, you know, if you've never used Azure SQL before and you're a DBA, you need to understand these different parts of the ecosystem because they're going to come important to understand how you are going to deploy, manage, and configure a SQL outside of the SQL environment itself. And we call these things, you know, the Azure ecosystem.
Yeah, definitely. This is definitely like things that become, you know, common language as you start to work with Azure. Now, when we think about Azure SQL, and we really want to get into this now, I know you guys have been watching for a while. You want to know, what is Azure SQL? What are the options? And in what scenarios do I use one versus the other? So there are three main deployments in Azure SQL when we think about it from deploying things that run and are hosted and live in Azure. Now, the first one is SQL Server on an Azure virtual machine. And as we go from left to right through the slide, what you're going to see is, yes, you give up some control and you give some more responsibility to Azure, but what you get in return is also pretty cool. So let's start with SQL Server and Azure Virtual Machine. So in this case, it's just SQL Server running on a virtual machine. So you pick the OS, you pick the version, you pick everything that this is running on, and Microsoft takes care of the infrastructure and the hardware. So that's SQL Server and Azure Virtual Machine. A lot of times we see people using this when they need access to the OS, but we'll dive deeper into that after this. Now, the next option is what moves us into our platform as a service or PaaS type of offering. So SQL Server on Azure Virtual Machine is an IaaS or infrastructure as a service, whereas PaaS or platform as a service is slightly different. And let's talk about why. So the first option is Azure SQL Managed Instance. And you can think of this as, hey, let's abstract away the OS from you and let's give you a managed SQL server that is versionless. That's what you can think about with Azure SQL Managed Instance, because this is going to give you all the instance scoped capabilities that you're used to having in SQL Server. Now, if you say, you know, I don't need these instance scoped capabilities and I want to try some of the newer things that have come to Azure SQL database, like hyperscale and serverless, that's when, you know, we go one level further and say, okay, let's abstract away the server and say, I just want a managed database with the latest innovations and the greatest tech and the most opportunities for cost savings. And that's where Azure SQL database comes into play. And today, those are that's the only deployment option where you can get hyperscale and serverless. So if we take a step back and kind of look at the spectrum, there are different ways that might land you into each of these different deployment options. And Bob, you know, do you think it'd be useful if we kind of went through some scenarios and talked about some customers and dove a little bit deeper into this, or do you think this is good?
Well, we've presented this before. It's a great overview to kind of think of left to right on my furthest control, my most control, my less control, my more capabilities. But I think what was really interesting is take this from perspective like a challenge solution. Like, what are the challenges that one of these is trying to solve? What's the solution? And what are the features and differentiators? That's probably the right way to look at it.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's do just that. And we're going to dive first into SQL Server on Azure Virtual Machines. So if we think about a customer challenge or a potential customer challenge or scenario, I want to migrate to the cloud as fast as possible, but maintain my OS and SQL Server functionality. So maybe you're really just trying to do this lift and shift. You don't want to upgrade. You don't want to move to versionless yet. One great example of this is if you're running on SQL Server 2008, which reached end of support a few years ago now, I think. But if you move to a virtual machine, you can get extended security updates. So this can be one reason you might decide to move to SQL Server in an Azure virtual machine.
But then let's kind of drill more to some actual functionality here. Like, what does it really come down to? So if you need complete SQL Server and operating system access, there could be a third-party app or something of that nature, this is going to be your best bet, right? You need expansive different versions of SQL and operating systems for whatever reason. We've actually seen customers that have third-party applications that require a specific SQL version or operating system version. Or maybe you need to go to Linux specifically or use containers. So using VMs, SQL and VMs are going to be your best option. There could be specific functionality, really, you know, specific to your application, like you need file stream or you need a simple recovery model database, which you're going to find out later in our modules. We don't offer that for PaaS services, but there's reasons behind that. But for whatever reason, you need that. And then you might use some of our BI services, maybe use analysis services or reporting services. And so we actually have specific VMs built for that type of functionality. But if you did move SQL Server to Azure VM, like why would you do this versus just running VM on your own? Well, first of all, we talked about the fact that it's infrastructure as a service. So we're managing all the hardware and the host and so forth. But consider like the example Anna just talked about, free extended security updates for non-supported versions of SQL Server. Or how would you like to have some automated backups and security update functionality? Like it'd be great if we had some of that to combine with this complete access. In other words, can Azure kind of help me along the way? Whether it's Azure backup or accelerating my performance with like blob caching for storing Azure storage? Or wouldn't I like to go look at a study that actually said there's a return on investment here for allowing Azure to host the infrastructure, but you control most of what happens with SQL Server and the operating system?
Yeah, definitely. And one customer story that we really like to talk about when we think about SQL Server in a virtual machine is Allscripts. And the reason I like this customer is because they were able to take about 600 on-premises virtual machines and failover using a technology called Azure Site Recovery in a matter of just a few weeks. So this included failing over their SQL Server VMs to SQL Server on Azure Virtual Machine. And this was able to be done very quickly. So you talk about moving quickly to Azure, this can be a great way to do it. And one of the interesting things is after they moved to SQL Server and Azure Virtual Machine, they started to evaluate some of the capabilities related to managed instance, and they started converting or migrating some of their instances to managed instance to take it full advantage of that platform as a service capabilities. Now, you know, we don't go into a ton of detail on SQL Server and Azure Virtual Machine for the rest of this series. So, you know, Bob, I know our viewers would love it if you could give a little bit of a deep dive onto SQL Server and Azure Virtual Machines.
Yeah, and we had a tough choice when building this workshop out, right? If you think about SQL Server itself and those engine capabilities, you know, those are going to be common inside the virtual machine of SQL Server itself. But I couldn't help myself. I was like, Anna, we have to give the audience some taste of what it's like to do SQL Server and VM. So let's spend some time doing that. So first of all, what about just deploying this thing? Like, what are your choices? Well, we talked about that idea of a marketplace. So this is really interesting. We will provide pre-installed versions of SQL Server and Windows and Linux for various versions out there that you can just choose from the marketplace, make a couple of choices, hit a button, and about 10 minutes or so later, a fully installed version of SQL and the OS will be available for you to use. That's kind of nice to have, right? And then you have this ability to say, oh, I'd like to pay as I go, you know, a subscription type model. We'll talk about it in a second. Or you can actually bring your own license to the table from an existing SQL Server license. So that's one way of doing it. The other way of doing it is to say, I'd like to install an operating system like a Windows version. I do this all the time from the marketplace. And then I will actually bring the SQL bits myself. I have the bits. I can copy up the setup files and just install SQL within the deployed virtual machine with the operating system. This is an interesting mode that a lot of people realize. Let's say you got SQL 2012 running an environment with Windows Server 2016. I just picked that combination. Azure Migrate allows you to take the VHD, the actual VM image from VMware or Hyper-V, and literally lift and shift the VM image, the snapshot, into Azure, just kick up the virtual machine and configure from there. So that's an interesting option if you'd like to deploy SQL that way. Now, this is something a lot of people, I don't think, know enough of. It's important. So you'd like to take some advantages in Azure. Like you'd like to be able to use licensing that you already have, like Azure Hybrid Benefit as a possibility. Or you'd like to do these automated backups and security updates, or even see your virtual machines with SQL in the portal along with other Azure SQL assets. So there's something called the SQL IS Agent Extension. Okay, so if you use the marketplace, we just put this in there for you and you can start using it. If you install your own SQL Server, you go through a process of actually installing and registering with this. Look at the advantages of that, especially from when it comes from this licensing point of view or managing your VMs with SQL. It's not a big brother thing. It's actually just trying to help you manage the VMs you have SQL already out there. So a lot of people don't realize that. That's something certainly to take a look at to use. Now, when it comes to SQL, a lot of it's about storage and sizes. So in your environment, you're used to picking virtual machines with certain configurations of memory, CPUs, number of cores, disks. We have all those. We have virtual machine sizing that we have, and we have guidance for you about picking the right VM sizes in Azure that match your SQL workload. And then you have choices to make. We're going to help guide you about putting your database and log on premium managed disk, on separate disks, taking advantage of things like read caching. We're going to help you put tempdb on the local SSD drive for maximum performance. And then we have something called Ultra for super low latency needs for performance. We have Ultra disks, things like your transaction log for, say, like in-memory OLTP might use something like Ultra. So a lot of choices there for sizing and your storage needs. You're going to have to kind of typically network this together. So we offer virtual networks in Azure. You're going to learn more about virtual networking with Azure PaaS, but you should, the same concept can apply, though, for your VM, where you can integrate on-premises assets and your networks with virtual networks in Azure. And then Azure Defender, which is a new service that's kind of been out there a little bit for PaaS, we now offer this to integrate in and apply this to your SQL Server Azure virtual machine environments. We'll talk more about Azure Defender in the security module. Those concepts like vulnerability assessments and advanced threat protection can now be used for VMs. Now, high availability still matters when you're in the cloud, and we have a lot of options for you. But one thing people don't realize, when you're in our infrastructure, you now have built-in HA at the VM at the node level. You know, for failovers that occur, we take care of all those things for you because the VM is in Azure. But you might want to use some of our technologies like failover cluster instance or availability groups, and we have that functionality. In fact, we have specifically built functionality so those can actually work really well in Azure. And we even have some interesting scenarios we announced last year where hybrid availability secondary replicas can be done, like a DR only can be done for free with your licensing. So check out those kind of type options as well. Even things like file snapshot backups or integration with Azure Backup itself for a complete VM SQL combination. So if you look down this list, you can see there's a lot of choices, but a lot of functionality to make your SQL and OS investment integrate well with that Azure ecosystem.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are pretty excited about all these different options, because what we're doing is we're really giving you a lot of control and a lot of options to kind of pick how you want your backups to be done, how you want your high availability to be managed, and that sort of thing. And when we kind of look at comparing IaaS, which is what we were just talking about, infrastructure as a service or SQL Server and Azure Virtual Machine, with your more platform as a service, PaaS type of offerings that you get with Azure SQL Database and Azure SQL Managed Instance, choice of control and some of the configuration capabilities are a big benefit of virtual machines. And one way I like to think about it, especially when you look at things like business continuity, availability, your backups, and geo-replication, with IaaS, all of these things are going to be possible for you to configure. Bob mentioned several of these on the previous slide. However, with PaaS, or Platform as a Service, or Azure SQL Database Managed Instance, either of those options, this is more of a built-in capability. For example, and we'll talk much more about it in coming modules, but some of our architectures just actually, you deploy a specific database, and we deploy an always-on availability group behind the scenes for you. So yes, in IaaS, it's possible and configurable, but a lot of times in PaaS, it's just kind of built in. And the same goes for things like geo-replication.
But there's even more. Think about scale. So when you pick those VM sizes for IaaS, you can change those. But in PaaS, we have an advantage. We could do things like auto-scaling with serverless, right? Things behind the scenes where you just make some declarative choices about ranges of cores, and we'll just scale for you. What about versionless? Anna, you touched on that concept earlier about versionless. It's an important concept. Even though we can offer automated updates, which are security updates for VMs, the SQL Server engine in PaaS is versionless. Behind the scenes, we are doing everything for you to update that version of SQL Server. This has huge advantages, because not only are you taking advantage of security updates that we just do for you, but if we find an important fix we need to make to the engine, we can roll this out proactively to prevent you ever seeing a problem. Or we can light up new functionality that are versionless through a private or a public preview program without installing a new major version of SQL Server. And then all sorts of built-in monitoring and intelligence capabilities can now be delivered because in PaaS, we have the ability to build and install and deploy software services that interact with your PaaS installation and help really, you know, provide some intelligent performance and monitoring capabilities. You're going to see examples of that throughout this 6-week series.
Definitely. And so now that we've kind of compared IaaS and PaaS, let's go into some of the platform as a service offerings, starting with Azure SQL Managed Instance. Now, remember, this is kind of abstracting away that OS and giving you a managed SQL server. So some customer challenges we see is a customer wants to remove some of the management overhead. So they don't want to deal with backups or availability or some of those things. They want to take advantage of a lot of the built-in capabilities that we were just mentioning about. However, they do leverage, or some of their systems leverage, SQL Server instance scoped capabilities. So what do I mean by that? I mean things like CLR, machine learning services, service broker, database mail, DTC. I think those are some of the big ones. But those instance scope features that you think about when you think about scoping to a whole instance, or features that are only available at an instance level, this is where we find customers really landing in Azure SQL Managed Instance, because it does have support for all of those, you know, most of the features in SQL Server today.
Yeah, and that's a great point out. And if you think about the actual key features, first of all, it comes down to the fact that this is an instance. We'll talk about something called an instance pool shortly, but I want you to think in terms, when you connect with, say, Management Studio, of you looking at an instance of SQL Server that just looks like your SQL Server. That's when we say the surface area is really, really important. And you know, actually the history behind this project is called Cloud Lifter. I remember in those days when we did that. The reason we did that is that customers were struggling a little bit to lift to the cloud an Azure SQL database deployment because of the features and things you just mentioned. But it is a fully managed service. Things like platform service capabilities that you've mentioned already are gonna be part of this thing. But another thing that we did CloudLifter for was native virtual network support. So at the time, we didn't have some of those capabilities for Azure Database. And so you want to be able to take your managed instance and integrate it into your virtual network, especially for an on-premises environment. And managed instance just comes with that type of capabilities. And then you also want to be able to do things like Azure Active Directory with on-premise identities. That's going to be part of this solution as well. But there's got to be, again, what are the differentiators to make this interesting for you besides having that instance? Notice this one. This is interesting. When you want to do a migration using things like database migration service, we can do almost zero downtime migration using log shipping type technologies. I know we just announced even the ability to have APIs for you to control that. But yeah, we can, behind the scenes, use log shipping to do a almost zero downtime migration from, say, a SQL Server on-premises or even an IaaS type environment. And then you're going to see later in the availability section where we're going to introduce something called failover groups, which are a big part of doing managed instance across regions. And then just like we talked about in VM, independent studies have looked at what is going to be that return on investment for you, where we're going to do more of the managing of some of the things behind the scenes. You do less managing of it, right? You don't have to worry as much about it. Are you going to get that return on investment? And Forrester's done a pretty good job of that. And then I remember putting a slide together and I thought to myself, what really is this? It's the best of SQL Server with the benefits of a managed service. That's kind of the summary, I think, of the way you should think about it.
Yeah, I think it's a great summary. And I've started saying it as well. So I'll give you kudos, but I'm also going to say that.
Right. You can steal it all you want.
Yeah. And a customer we really like to talk about when we talk about managed instance is Komatsu, because they were able to migrate a pretty sizable database with almost no code changes in just a matter of days, a terabyte and a half. And now these aren't just, you know, marketing buff. These are real numbers. They had 49% cost reduction and 25 to 30% performance gain. So that's pretty significant. That's not just like 5 to 10%, like 49% cost reduction. Pretty significant. We're seeing a lot of adoption of Azure SQL Managed Instance. And like Bob said, best of SQL Server, the benefits of a managed service. Now, the last deployment offering we have to talk about today is Azure SQL Database. And there are lots of customer challenges that kind of lands a customer in Azure SQL Database. So let's talk about a few of them. So a lot of times we have customers that want to build modern applications. So they want to take advantage of things like cloud elasticity and also this idea of serverless. And that's something you're only going to get in Azure SQL Database today with hyperscale and serverless, which we're going to talk about actually later in this session today, as well as upcoming sessions. Now, we also have customers who want to do things like manage multiple databases. So perhaps they're a software as a service provider and they have many databases and they want to do things like resource share and cost optimize. And that's also something that Azure SQL Database has a pretty good solution that's been around for years to do. But there are some other capabilities and features as well. And let's dive into them.
Yeah. And again, think about this. Your goal is to have a database. That's what you want, right? Even though behind the scenes, we may dedicate an instance of SQL Server for you, and you may have some feeling of that by looking at, say, a DMV or something. The concept is you want a database, and that's the abstraction point you'd like to work with. And so the idea of a database is important, or an elastic pool, which is, of course, a series of databases, and then just alluded to. But because of the fact that you are going to work just at a database level, behind the scenes, we can offer some interesting technologies that we can't anywhere else. Things like you've already alluded to, hyperscale and serverless compute. Those are very important aspects to the promise of Azure SQL Database. And you're going to hear us talk about that in today's session and other sessions as well in these series. It is a fully managed service. In fact, it's the fullest of managed services, again, because you're doing a database. And you'll see in the security module, we're going to help try to solve some of your concerns about exposing things on endpoints on the internet by something called private link support. And we're going to offer that in an Azure SQL Database. In addition, we're going to go to the highest level of availability here in this case by being able to offer something called availability zones. And so if you look at differentiators, that kind of technology allows us to offer the highest availability of any of our Azure SQL choices here through our SLA. And quite frankly, the highest in the industry that's been published for a service level agreement of that kind of type number. That's pretty significant. And we'll talk more in availability about the entire SLA system and what does that really quite mean to you. But this is interesting. Many of you out there using SQL Server understand the terms like RPO, Recovery Point Objective, and Recovery Time Objective. We're the only database out there offering a service level agreement for those kind of type numbers, not just for SLA. And so just like some other studies, some people have asked me before, like, this database is interesting, but I don't really know, are you really performant? Can you really meet the needs of my application? So GigaOm did a study and looked at the performance using benchmarking to compare us to in other industry databases. And so that's something you sort of can take a look up if you're kind of wondering, like, is it possible to perform with Azure SQL Database and what kind of costs am I going to have compared to the competition?
Yeah, thanks, Bob. And, when we think about customers here, because we always like to mention a real-world customer scenario, I like to talk about AccuWeather. Now, there are a lot of customers we could have talked about, but I like AccuWeather because they came to Azure SQL Database and said, I don't want to worry about managing a SQL Server, managing versions. I just want a database and I want to build modern applications. So they were able to very quickly get up and running and start building these new applications, leveraging things like Azure Machine Learning Services, Azure Data Factory, and then scale as their service either needed more or needed less compute or other services. So it's been really powerful for them to use something like Azure SQL Database. And now what we're going to do, Bob, and I know you love this section, we're going to do some knowledge check questions.
I mean, Anna, there are people right now that are just tuning in going, I thought I was just going to sit back and kind of learn from Anna and Bob. You're going to test them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you think, Okay. Yeah, we're going to do lots of quizzes. We got quizzes. We got assignments. We'll do all sorts of stuff. We'll try to stump Bob.
Yeah, that's what you really meant. I really want to make Bob look bad in front of a lot of people. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I will say, if you want to use the official poll, then please head over to Learn TV. That's where the poll is going to be hosted. Otherwise, if you're not on Learn TV, feel free to put in your answer in the chat, whatever it is, wherever you're streaming from. We can also see those as well. But if you want to be part of the overall ticker, then you have to go into Learn TV. So that being said, let's take a look at this question. So the question is, you want to migrate to the cloud, but you leverage a third-party application which requires access to the OS. Which is going to be the easiest Azure SQL deployment option to move to?
Okay. I'm going to think about this while you're getting your answers in. You know, Anna, how I roll. It's process of elimination. That's the best way to take multiple choice tests.
Definitely. And we do have some answers coming in okay. Learn, as well as on YouTube and Twitch. So okay. keep it coming in. We also have someone on Twitch. They said, Bob, you can never be bad. I don't know what that was in reference to.
I'm not sure, but I'll take it. The first one.
Yeah.
I think it's like my Ranger shirt today. I'm rocking my baseball team in honor of the baseball season coming up. So
you are, yeah. I'm just ready for the next sport because the past
ready for the next sport. I love the way you said that. Yes. Okay. What do we got, Anna?
Well, we have someone who commented on Twitch, and I like this comment. They said, "It depends."
My favorite answer. Yeah. That's what I should use.
But yeah, let's take a look. It looks like the most common answer is between A and B. A has got about 80% of our votes on Learn. For YouTube and Twitch, it looks like A is the most common one as well. You know, before we answer this question, you know, it might be helpful. I'm not sure if we exactly talked about elastic pools. Bob, do you want to give a brief overview of where elastic pools falls into all this?
Well, Darth, we actually are going to talk a little bit more about pools in the next slide. So Anna, I'm wondering, you snuck it in when the next slide is what I get to talk about pools, but honestly, what it's about, it's about a collection of databases. It's about a pool of databases that allows you to pay for performance across these and manage these as a pool of them. And it all came out of the need for software as a service developers that said, look, I got like 1,000 of these things. And what am I going to do? Pay for the maximum performance of all 1,000? I'd like to share the cost and share the management across these, which is why we call it Elastic Pool. That's really kind of what the concept is.
Awesome. Thanks, Bob. And thanks, Darth Vader.
Thank Darth, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a look at the answer. What do you think the answer is, Bob?
Well, again, we talked about, and you know me, I like to use process elimination. So I'm going to tell you what it not is to get to the answer of what it is. So you want to migrate to the cloud. That's a good one. These all involve the cloud. That's easy. But you leverage a third-party app which requires access to the operating system. Now, you're a little tricky because you say easiest to move to here, right? But it does say access to the operating system. And if you remember, we talked about the fact that infrastructure as a service gives you operating system access. Platform of service does not give you operating system access because we manage even the VM itself, not just the OS. In fact, you don't even know what OS SQL's running on in a PaaS environment. So the problem is here, C and D are gone because databases, you know, those are PaaS environments. And even though Azure SQL Managed Instance may feel like that to you, like an instance, you don't have access to the operating system. And that's a key tip, Anna, because later I'm gonna give a tip for the audience. You may get questions where we ask you about using the file system for managed instance. You don't have access to the file system, okay? Because you don't have access to the operating system. So B can't be, therefore the answer has got to be A.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm going to go ahead and put up the next question, okay. But we can go ahead and talk about it. So this next question is another scenario. So you should be able to see this on Learn TV again, or you can put your answer in the chat. But the scenario is you want to migrate to the cloud and remove some of the management associated with SQL Server, but your application leverages CLR and service broker capabilities from SQL Server. Which Azure SQL deployment option will be the easiest to move to? So this one's kind of a tricky one. Bob, do you have any tips for folks as they think about this one?
Well, it's not just about easiest. That'll be my tip. It's more than just about easiest, but I can see why somebody is going to look at that and may choose an answer that is not the exact right answer. I would say there's a best answer here. How about that?
The best answer. Yeah. So go ahead and put your answers in. Let's see. I'm not seeing any just yet.
Okay. I like how you said migrate to the cloud, though. That applies. You threw that in there. That was good. It's good that you did that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, migration is a big piece of all of this. I know we don't dive a ton into it in this series, but yeah, it looks like some answers are coming in. I see quite a few of one answer.
Okay.
Seeing right now about 90% of folks saying managed instance and about 10% saying SQL DB.
Okay.
And while we're waiting for your answers, this is an interesting question that just came in. Malusi says, is it possible to use MS SQL Server and link it to Azure, and how so?
Yeah, all sorts of ways to do that. Absolutely. You know, for example, you could even do a link server. That's one certain way, right? And we even just mentioned the fact that for Azure Virtual Machine, you could have a Azure VM be a secondary replica, an async secondary replica as like a DR to your on-premises SQL Server. That's an interesting scenario because we announced a licensing change that if that Azure VM up there with is a secondary replica is just for DR purposes, it's free. How crazy is that? Free core licensing to do that with, right? So that is certainly one way to do it.
Awesome. Thanks, Bob. Hopefully that helps with your question, Malusi. Okay, so it looks like votes are kind of starting to slow down. Looks like we got 92% of people saying managed instance, 8% saying SQL DB, and a few people in the comments saying they were between B and C but couldn't decide.
Yeah, come on now. You got to make a choice and a decision, right? So let's walk through it. We mentioned that surface level, instance level features, which is what CLR and broker are. Think about those. SQL CLR and broker are instance level functionalities. You know, that is something that is not in Azure SQL Database, which is why we did Cloud Lifter, right? So already we got to eliminate, you know, C and D from our answers. So now it comes to A and B. And, you know, it is true that SQL CLR and Service Broker could run in a SQL Server, in SQL Server and Azure Virtual Machine. But notice Anna's first part of her question. I want to remove some of the management associated with SQL Server. And we talked about how Platform as a Service gives you that managed capabilities. So I would eliminate A and see the best answer would be B.
Yep, that is correct.
Okay.
It seems like most people were on board with that. So great job to everyone participating. Right.
So now that you've tested everybody, Anna, maybe we should talk about pools, right? You know, I think this is interesting because I remember you had this idea. It was a really good idea because what do? We did, you know, VM, MI, and DB, but then a lot of people are still torn, like, what is between MI and DB again? In fact, I remember we were first doing this, people were still asking us that. So maybe it's kind of important for me to go through this a little bit. You know, managed instance is that single instance with a surface area and native network support and fully managed. But what we found was, is we wanted a way to speed things up from a deployment point of view and actually provide a way to condense the number of instances that could show up in a virtual machine. Because with a single instance, it's kind of dedicated. So an instance pool came along, which is in preview right now. And so it can be a more cost-effective way to do an instance. In fact, it's the only way to get down to two vCores. Because the minimum number of vCores for an instance is 4. So if you just want 2 vCores for a managed instance, it's in public preview now, you're going to use this concept called an instance pool. And what you do is you go out there and build your instance pool first, and then you deploy instances within it. So the initial instance pool can take a little bit of time, just like a single instance can, but then the instances within the pool are pretty fast, you know, go through and deploy those things. And then for Azure SQL Database, again, it's a single database. This is where you get your maximum storage with things like hyperscale or get that great capability with something called serverless, which we're going to talk about, and private link support. But then you also have that pool concept for databases. Again, this is a little different where, remember, you're kind of abstracted from the instance here, right? So you don't know where these exist. But a pool concept is, again, I'd like a lot of these. I'd like to share costs and management of these across a large number of these. So I'm going to build an elastic pool. And when you go in and do that deployment, and I know in Anna, in the module and deployment, you're going to see some of those options. You get to choose, hey, I'm doing a database. I'd like it to be part of a pool that I've already established. So that's kind of really when you think about these two, you've got managed instance on the side. Again, it's a fully managed service, but it is a full SQL instance. It's going to feel like that to you. And you got an Azure database, which you could have multiple databases for something called a logical server or a large number of databases in something called a pool.
Yeah, and I think this comparison is super helpful, you know, figuring out which deployment option is going to be best for you. And if you are migrating, we do have tools that help you with that. For example, we just launched a new experience in Azure Migrate, which allows you to actually assess your on-prem instances, and it will recommend not only the deployment option, but also the different service level objective and the service tier and the compute tier. And that's what we're going to talk about next. So we've talked about the deployment option. So are you going to pick SQL Server and Azure Virtual Machine, Azure SQL Managed Instance, or Azure SQL Database? And then within those, are you going to choose this pools type of option or not? So that's what we've talked about. Now, once you've picked that, there's still a few other choices that you have to make. And really, these choices are designed to give you flexibility, but it's important to understand what the differences between them are. So let's start by looking at the next decision that you have to make, which is around purchasing models.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize to the audience, we're just getting you introduced to this, right? So you're going to, like in the next module, we're going to talk about this again. In fact, we're going to repeat ourselves and talk about what these are, because we're going to go through a sequence of your choices, right? But we wanted to introduce you these concepts because these are decisions you'll be making as you go through this process. In fact, if you're pre-planning about deciding MI or DB, this is going to be helpful to you. So for a database, an Azure database, you do have something called what we call a purchasing model to make a decision. For the longest time, we had this concept called a database transaction unit, and that was your only choice. And it's really kind of, think of it as a prepackaged way of looking at resources. It's the most simplified way for you to choose your compute, like CPUs, memory, IO, et cetera. You just pick a DTU number, and we have these levels called like basic, standard, and premium. You pick levels within that, and then we give you some sort of predictable performance number that your app would adhere to. Now, we had a lot of feedback that people would come along and say, I want some more flexibility. I want flexibility for licensing and flexibility for choices to separate this choice of virtual cores and storage. So therefore, we came along with this vCore model. Now, we say Microsoft's recommendation because what we found is people wanted to apply that Azure hybrid benefit. They want to take their SQL licenses and apply it to the cloud. And this is the choice you need to make to get that. Plus, people wanted things like reserve capacity, or they'd like to pick the number of cores they'd like and storage, the max storage, separately. And that's where this vCore model, you know, comes into play. If you want to make this choice, you kind of have to decide for yourself. But here's the good news. You can go back and forth. So if you go to the vCore model and say, look, DTU is better for me, or you go to DTU and I'd like the vCore model, it is something you can use in the portal through APIs to change that decision.
Definitely. And so that's the purchasing model. And again, like Bob mentioned, this is only available for Azure SQL Database. For Azure SQL Managed Instance, you don't have this choice. You just get the vCore model. So that's the purchasing models. Let's now shift and talk about the different service tiers that are in both SQL Database and Managed Instance, but we're focusing again on the vCore model. Now, the first service tier that you have, and is pretty self-explanatory by the name, is a general purpose service tier. Now, we're going to talk about this later in the availability module, which is going to be week 5 of our series. But just to give you a little glimpse, sneak peek under the hood of what happens in general purpose is underneath, we're deploying a failover cluster instance or something very similar to that if you're familiar with SQL Server and availability. Now, this is, like the name suggests, good for most this workload. So this is your general purpose database. It works really well. It's cost efficient. And there are some other options that can help with cost savings. Now, the other main option that we have in both SQL Database and SQL Managed Instance is business critical. And again, like the name suggests, this is really meant for your mission critical type of workloads that need that low latency, fast recovery, and even some read scale right off the bat. And again, just to give you a little peek under the hood, what's happening in the business critical service tier is when you deploy, we're actually going to deploy an always on availability group underneath the hood for you. And that's how you're going to get this really fast recovery and readable secondary. Now, if we dive a little bit deeper into what that entails, for general purpose, you can think about this as having remote storage. So again, we'll dive much deeper into this in the availability module. And I've used some, you know, Yelp style ways to compare the two. So you're going to get more IOPS or IO per second with the business critical service tier, but that's also going to come at a cost because, again, we're maintaining this always on availability group underneath the scenes. If you need in-memory OLTP or using in-memory type of workloads, you're going to want to use business critical as well because it's not supported in general purpose today. And again, like I mentioned about the always on availability group, that kind of explains the replicas you're seeing down at the bottom for business critical. You have a primary and you have three secondaries, but one of those secondaries can be used for read workloads, and that's what that R stands for. Now on the other side, you have less IOPS, less cost, no in-memory OLTP, but you have an option, another option between provisioned compute and serverless compute. And I think, Bob, you're gonna dive deeper into that in just a moment. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Awesome. So these are the main service tiers. I'll hold off and let you guys have the suspense build on serverless. These are the main service tiers available for SQL database and SQL managed instance, but there is one more service tier for SQLDB.
And first of all, I love the way he rolled Yelp style comparisons. Yeah, only Anna would say Yelp style. You know, we've been alluding to hyperscale. Hyperscale is something only available in Azure SQL database, but has some very unique characteristics. Now notice here what we say, most business workloads, but here's the key, highly scalable storage and read scale requirements. And so if you compare it to the other things we've shown here as far as storage goes and compute and replicas, consider this. Hyperscale has a unique architecture, which we'll show you in the availability module, that uses a combination of local and remote storage, okay? And because of the way we actually do that, the IOPS that you're going to get out of this are going to be slightly between what you see with a general purpose and business critical type environment. And the costs for this you're going to see are a little, again, going to be a little bit in between what you might pay for from general purpose and business critical. But notice these last two points, these are very important. Your largest database size capabilities come from hyperscale. We publish 100 terabytes, but we really think of it as unlimited storage. And then notice the diagram compared to what Anna showed you in the left and right. You get a primary compute. You're just like you're gonna work with anything else, you're always gonna have a primary replica you're gonna be connecting to. But notice here, you get up to four read replicas that you can scale to, as opposed to the fact that general purpose has no read replicas and a business critical only has one read replica. And so you're going to love the fact when we talk more about hyperscale during availability about this architecture and about the fact that for large scalable read scale operations, you're going to get the most availability here with hyperscale. And because of the fact we're using local or remote storage, you're going to see some amazing functionality where we're going to talk about how point in time restore becomes blazingly fast because of the way we actually store the database files in Azure storage, but surface the data to you through a tiered set of caching layers.
And so we'll let the suspense subside. I mentioned earlier in Azure SQL database, you have one other choice in the general purpose service tier, and that's between provision compute and serverless compute. So let's take a look at an example. Let's say I have a line of business application, which most people use only during business hours. So maybe between 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 in my time zone. Now, after work or after office work hours, people go home and they don't use the database anymore. Now with the provision compute model, you're gonna be paying for the compute you have whether or not you're using it or not. And this has its benefits because it's guaranteed, it's available, it's there for you, you've already budgeted for it. But what serverless can do is in these periods, for example, you know, the nighttime when no one's using your line of business application, or the weekends where, you know, developers aren't working on an app or something like that, you can actually enable something called an auto pause delay. So what you can see here is in this example, around 22 or 23 o'clock, what happens is the database becomes inactive. People aren't using it, no one's opening connections to the database. And after that auto pause delay time, which again is something that you can set here, it's set to about 2 hours, the database actually becomes paused. So what does that mean? That means that we actually have separated the compute from the storage. And during this time, we're essentially gonna shut down SQL Server. And so you're only gonna have to pay for the storage at that point. So this is obviously drastically going to reduce your costs if you have this kind of intermittent type of workflow. And in addition to that, what serverless allows you to do is set a minimum and a maximum number of vCores. So in this example, you can see we set the min as 1 vCore and the max as 4 vCore. And what it's going to do is it's going to auto scale you on a per second basis to the max of CPU or memory of what you actually need. So this auto scaling capability is pretty powerful, and they implemented a really interesting new cache reclamation system to kind of bring you back down after this period of high intensity CPU. And this is great for, you know, line of business applications. Like I mentioned, this scenario where people aren't really using it after hours on the weekend, but it can also be great for things like if you have a new application, you're not sure how much CPU it's going to need at a given time, or if you're dealing with dev tests. We've seen a lot of adoption in the serverless space for many, many different use cases. You know, Bob, I'm sure you've also seen that as well with customers.
Absolutely.
So now, Bob, I thought it might be interesting, you know, if you have something you could show us. We haven't seen any demos yet.
Yeah, what's a session without demos? I'd love to show you a demo, Anna.
Cool, let's take a look.
Yeah, so what I have here is a recording, and I know sometimes people don't like recordings of demos, but I recorded this for a very good reason, because we're going to show you several aspects of serverless compute as compared to general purpose provision. And some of this needs to be time-lapsed. So it'd be better to show you kind of in a video. So let me just kind of kick this off and let's talk through it. So I've got an Azure SQL database, and you're going to see here, I'm going to zoom in. I've got a general purpose 2V core general purpose. We'll talk about Gen 5. We're going to mention those things later during configuration. So I'm going to run a performance test with my favorite tool called OStress. Okay, Anna, you've seen me do OStress before, right? Going to run a typical query against a sample database, going to kick off like 8 users, 25 iterations, and I'm time-lapsing the performance of running this workload on my 2V cores. So I'm going to kick this thing off with running OStress, and it's going to come back and run in a certain time frame that, for me, takes a little too long. So I time-lapse this a little bit. It's going to get finished. It's going to take about 14 seconds. I want this to run faster. I think I've got a CPU bottleneck, right? So what I'll do is I'll go back here. In fact, this is really cool. The Azure portal, you can see here the utilization. It's almost 100% consumed for this general purpose 2V core environment. So I'm like, hey, I need more CPUs. No problem. Go into the portal, use a little slider and say, you know what? Give me 8 CPUs. Couple minutes later, the scaling operation finishes, pretty low downtime. I run it, it's gonna come back, boom, 5 minutes. That's pretty cool. But you're probably asking yourself, like, what does that do with serverless? So instead of having to do that operation, I'm gonna take another database that's the exact same copy of that database, and I'm going to deploy it as a serverless database, okay, instead of it being this 2V core. Now, what you're going to see in the portal is something different. Remember, Anna mentioned about ranges. Can you see right here? In the portal now, since I pick serverless, I can say, oh, I'd like a max of 8 cores, but a min of 2V cores. Also notice this auto pause that Anna mentioned. I'm going to turn that off for now. So I'm going to go back, going to run the same workload against serverless. Notice it took even faster than general purpose. Now, that's not always guaranteed, but I'd expect to have similar performance from my 8V core deployment. Notice the portal looks different now with serverless. I not just get utilization here on the left, I get billing for CPU, because Anna mentioned billing slightly different. On the graph here, on the left-hand side of this peak, is kind of like me getting billed for min V core usage, okay? So when I was not using it, I got billed for min. When I was not, you know, running the app on the left and right side, that's min, but I'm getting billed in the middle there at the spike for the actual usage. Now, here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna turn on that auto pause feature Anna talked about. The minimum is 1 hour. And of course, this is where time lapse comes into play. I'm gonna turn on auto pause and I'm gonna run this thing, but then I'm gonna wait an hour and not use this. Now go look at the metrics for billing, okay? Shows here the last 4 hours. I see a similar graph as I saw before. You see how this works? So I see my non-usage in orange shows up as min core usage. You can see here the blue is min core billing and on the right side, and then the maximum usage is there in the middle. The orange is not using any at all. The key is when I'm not using this, but I've got min core not auto pause, I still get billed some. But here the key is to the right. Auto pause is kicked in. I'm not using it and I'm not billed for anything. That is one of those interesting scenarios. So I get ranges of CPUs, Anna, but I also get the ability to pause my database and not get billed for any compute usage, just billed for storage.
Yeah, it's a pretty powerful demo. I really think serverless is just really cool. Personally, especially for all my demo databases, I'm always using serverless because, you know, it's all set up and ready to go, but when I'm not using it, it's paused and it keeps it really, really cost efficient for me to use. Now, I put up another poll for you guys to go ahead and take a look at. What I'll do is I'll just kind of explain the question, and then we have a few questions in the chat so we can take some of them. And then we have one more question after this as well. So thanks for all your participation. So this question has another scenario, and it says, you're moving an application and a database to Azure, but your database is currently 62 terabytes with plans to grow. You don't leverage any instant scope features today. Which Azure SQL deployment option will be the easiest to move to? So go ahead and use either the LearnTV poll or the chat to put in your answer to that question. And while we're waiting for answers there, we did have one question, Bob. I think this is a great question about serverless.
Okay.
Nick says, would you be able to set specific times? For example, I always work between 9 and 17 hours and then stop.
Yeah. I mean, you have the ability to set auto-pausing whenever you need to use it, right? You can enable auto-pausing. So you have the ability to go in, since this is all based on CLIs and APIs, you could go in and set your auto-pausing to be a certain time frame that I need it for, and then you're not going to get charged that time. That's exactly like what you said earlier in that chart. So if you say auto-pausing, I want to do auto-pause, and you say auto-pause for an hour, if you don't use the database between 9, as you say here, 9 and 1700, then you wouldn't get charged. So you're not setting a schedule up. You're just saying the fact that when the database is idle during those times, pause me. So during that time frame, if you didn't use it for a couple hours, you wouldn't get charged. But all of a sudden, if you start using it again, we'll ramp up and then we'll charge you only that time. But then let's say you paused again for an hour. So you did it again, then you would become in the auto pause mode. So you don't set a schedule up. You just set for how long do I want to wait until I'm idle until I go to that pause state.
Yeah, exactly. And one other thing that you know you might want to consider when you think about what your auto pause delay is going to be is when this pauses, remember a SQL Server essentially shuts down. So when it starts up again, you are starting with a cold cache. So if you're just hitting this intermittently but don't need all of that stuff to be there for most of the day, then maybe you want to set a little bit longer of an auto pause type of delay.
And I do want to call out the one thing, anything you configure with Azure is programmable. So if you wanted to change the configuration of auto pause or your ranges and so forth during certain times, you could do that, but it doesn't mean you set a schedule for pausing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And looks like we've got a lot of answers in for this question. Okay. Again, this was about a 62 terabyte database, and it seems like we had a few people say SQL Server and Azure Virtual Machine, but the vast majority of people are saying Azure SQL Database single database, but however, 20% of you are saying elastic pool. So maybe that's something we need to talk about as well. So Bob, do you want to take us through this one?
Let's talk about elastic pool first. Elastic pool is a set of databases. So you said here you wanted to actually have a database at 62 terabytes. So elastic pool is not taking 62 terabytes and sharing it across a bunch of databases, okay? So that's eliminated here. That's not the answer, but it's good to know that elastic pool is not sharing a bunch, you know, data across databases, but for 62 terabytes, it's a set of a bunch of databases, right? So that wouldn't be the case. Now, we didn't really specifically say Azure SQL Managed Instance doesn't support 62 terabytes, but I called out that your maximum storage is not for managed instance. So we're gonna eliminate that one. And SQL Server and Azure VM won't support that size today. So the only option would be single database, and it would be that hyperscale option that we mentioned.
Yeah, definitely. So it seems like most of you all got that, but maybe a few got confused on the elastic pools bit. Now I have one more question, and this one should be an easy one because we've talked a lot about serverless today. This scenario is you have an Azure SQL database with a serverless compute tier deployed with an auto pause delay of 2 hours. After 2 hours of no activity, what happens to your database and the incurred charges?
You know, I always didn't like professors that said this should be easy. I never really did like those. So
it puts the pressure on.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah. So go ahead and put in your answers for this. Let me take a look because we have been getting a good number of questions in here. Okay, maybe this one, I'm not sure if this is a question, but Miles says, you don't pay for what you use, you pay for what you provision. So I'm guessing they're comparing provision compute versus serverless compute.
Yeah, I think Miles has a good point. I mean, let's just summarize it real quick. So if you do provision compute, you are paying for the number of CPUs you choose, whether you use them or not. You pick 8, you pay for 8. And the storage is independent of that, right? So you provisioned 8, you pay for that. With serverless, you're going to give us a range. You're going to say, hey, I want a min of 2 potentially and a max of 8. If you're not turning on autopause, that's key. You don't turn on autopause and you don't use any CPU, you pay for min, okay? Or you pay for what you use, like you use 4 or 6 or even the max of 8, okay? If you turn on autopause and you got 2 to 8 and we pause you because you didn't use it for an hour, even if you have minute 2, you don't pay for 2, you pay for none, right? That's kind of the key to it. But be careful too. It's very, very important. Go look at the documentation about using things, right, in the database. Once you connect and start using it, we're going to start ramping you up, and you're going to start pay for that min CPU. So that's kind of how I would look at it. Thanks, Miles.
Yeah, I think that's a great call out. And again, thanks, Miles, for calling that out. We have a few other questions coming in. Not all of them exactly relevant to this stream, but let's take a look at the answers. So it looks like we've gotten a good number of responses in, and they are mostly on A. So Azure will pause your database to stop compute costs and only charge you for storage. So Bob, can you talk a little bit about how you would think about this question and answer?
Yeah, I think the key, again, is elimination. Pausing is not about changing a service tier. So it's important about that concept of service tier. And don't be, you know, it's okay if you're like, hey, man, I don't know what a service tier is. We're going to talk about that term so many times, right? Remember the service tiers Anna talked about? General purpose, business critical, hyperscale. So you don't reduce a service tier. You actually change how compute costs will happen for your database. In fact, as it turns out, today serverless is only available for the general purpose service tier. So you got service tiers, and then under general purpose, you can have provisioned or serverless. Okay, that's not available in business critical or hyperscale. So in that serverless compute tier, which is part of general purpose, you wouldn't change the tier. You would only actually stop compute cost and only charge for storage during the time you're paused. That's kind of the key.
Yeah, definitely. So the answer is A, which it seems like most of you were able to get, which is awesome. You've really been killing these knowledge checks. So that's good. We'll have to stay tuned for next week and hopefully stump more of you because that's my goal.
You will, because you stumped me. So yeah, for sure.
So the kind of the one of the last things you have to think about, I mean, if you can even think about making another choice, is hardware. And we don't have to spend a ton of time on this. Because when it comes to hardware, typically there's one main option for you. So in this case, that's Gen 5 or Generation 5, and you can see some information about it on the left. And you can kind of guess that, you can kind of assume that as time goes on and hardware advances, these options are also going to change. For example, there are some future generations that became available recently, some that are memory optimized versus compute optimized, and there's also a newer version of hardware. Bob, I'd love if you could share a little bit about it related to the DC series. And this is for confidential computing.
Yeah. One just comment here, you know, it's not our intention to make this complicated for you to make these hardware choices, right? But we want to give you the option. So most people are going to pick Gen 5, but if you want to get the maximum number of cores for Azure SQL Database, you're going to pick M series, for example. But DC series is interesting. It's a new VM choice from the Azure team, which includes an Intel chip specifically designed for Enclave security. So we recently announced the preview for Azure SQL Database with secure enclaves. And behind the scenes, to make that work, we're going to use Intel SGX as the enclave, the protected memory environment in the actual compute itself. And so the DC series is exactly that. It's built specifically to support our always encrypted secure enclave technology.
Oh, looks like you're on mute. I did it. It had to happen once, right?
Exactly.
But I think it's really interesting is what I was saying. And it's something we'll dive into a lot in our security module, which will be the third week. So 2 weeks from now. Now, the last thing we have to think about, or kind of you might be interested in, is these interfaces for Azure SQL. And I'll show you in a moment how we've kind of done this Azure SQL unified experience. Because again, like Bob mentioned, we are trying to make this easier for you. But there are some other tools and technologies that you're already familiar with using, or you might be interested in using, that you want to consider.
Yeah, Anna, you know, along the way when I started this assessment experience, I thought to myself, what am I going to use as a tool to kind of look at these things? And I thought, what does the majority of the world use? And it's Management Studio. So you need to have assurances that if you're a Management Studio user, not only is it compatible to work with the Azure SQL choices we've talked about today, but it knows how to snap to that. So if you go into Management Studio and you pick what's called a logical server, which we'll show you during deployment for your Azure SQL databases, we will kind of change the menu options or the Object Explorer options that snap to only Azure SQL database. Or if you use Managed Instance, it'll look like a complete SQL Server instance. In fact, you could actually take Azure SQL data. I think I've done this before. You got Azure SQL database, Azure VM, and Managed Instance. Connect to all of them in a single pane of glass with Management Studio and kind of see those differences. But Azure Data Studio, Anna, that's one of your favorite tools to use. That's a new and upcoming tool that we've built. And just the notebook experience alone is worth using this tool. You're going to see us do demonstrations throughout this series a lot with something called a notebook with Azure Data Studio. But there's more. For example, we announced private preview of a new migration experience to do inline migrations to Azure SQL from SQL Server, and it's going to be done through Azure Data Studio. So Azure Data Studio, one of the cool things about it people love, it works across operating systems. So you're a MacBook lover today, you want a native experience, use Azure Data Studio. Linux, Windows, and Mac all works with that tool. But I mentioned before earlier to the Azure ecosystem that people like to use APIs and command line interfaces, and that's me. So out of the gate, notice here it says the word T-SQL. One of the things I emphasized to Anna during our beginning journey, and I think Anna has a phrase, it's just SQL, was the T-SQL language is so known by so many people around the world that as they make this journey, they're afraid, do those T-SQL skills go away? Hey, here's the good news. They don't just go away, they get better. We take the T-SQL language and we enhance it to work with Azure SQL. So all those T-SQL skills you have all apply to everything you're seeing here in the cloud. But maybe you're a PowerShell user. That's going to work. Or new PowerShell commandlets we've built specifically for managing experience across these assets. And then if you've never seen Az CLI, I love Az CLI. I use it all the time in the Cloud Shell. Works on Windows, Linux, and Macs. And it's a great interface as well to do command line interfaces to anything you can do with Azure SQL. But you really want to get gnarly. I call it gnarly. Go to the REST API. I know my colleague Dimitri is like, Bob, have you tried Az CLI with REST to solve this problem? I'm like, no, I'm not a REST programmer. I'm sorry. But if you want to go to the lowest levels, you can even do REST APIs because all of our interfaces for Azure SQL PaaS actually support REST. And then what's tried and true? SQL Command and BCP, they all work great. All those tools work fine. In fact, again, I use Azure Cloud Shell all the time to use those tools. But yeah, those tried and true tools work just fine applying those to any Azure SQL assets we have today. So look at our list here, a unified experience in the portal, but tried and true tools and new tools, you know, to help use your existing skills you know today, but also us to grow you new skills in the experience with Azure SQL.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I'll add is throughout this series, if you stick with us, which we really hope you will, throughout this series, through the exercises, you're going to get to play with almost all of these different interfaces and tools and kind of see what makes sense to you. You're going to see, like Bob mentioned, the Azure Cloud Shell, which is built into your browser, into the Azure portal, and it allows you to do things like access Azure CLI, PowerShell, SQL CMD, all from within the portal using command line. So there's a lot of really cool tools that we're going to take a look at. But kind of to round out this session, we thought it'd be interesting to take a look at this Azure SQL unified experience. So at the very beginning, Bob mentioned how in 2020, we announced Azure SQL. And we didn't just announce it as a thing. We tried to follow through in some of the tools that we have so that you can see this Azure SQL experience as well. So I'm going to hop over and show you an example of this. So this is my Azure portal view, which you can see here. And what you can see is a few things you're probably familiar with seeing, create a resource, but what you also see is this Azure SQL button. Now, this button is great because what it allows you to do is actually take a look at all of your databases, all of your Azure SQL resources in a given subscription, or you can set multiple, you can set certain resource groups, you can add other filters. But what's really cool about this is it's going to group them all together regardless of what Azure SQL deployment option they are. So you can see I have my SQL databases. I can see if they're hyperscale, general purpose, business critical, serverless. I can see my managed instances, my Azure SQL database logical servers, which we'll learn a lot more about in the next session. I can even see my SQL virtual machine. So this one's running SQL Server Enterprise 2019 on Windows Server 2019. So there's lots of information here. Even Elastic Pools are here. So I kind of get this single pane of glass to see everything that exists. Now, similarly, if I go to create a new resource, what's going to happen is I'm going to have more options, but this should look familiar. This is very similar to the way we designed the slides, where you have your three main deployment options, and under each one, you can dive into what those options are. So for SQL database, you can dive in and see single database or Elastic Pool or database server. For managed instance, you can see options there. And this is perhaps the coolest part is for the SQL Server in an Azure virtual machine, you can actually get every single image in one place. Now, before this, if any of you had been trying to deploy a SQL Server in Azure virtual machine, it was really hard to find the specific image you wanted. And if I go all the way down, what you're going to see is I can find a bring your own license SQL Server 2008 R2 SP3 on Windows Server. And I can deploy that and make it easier for me to migrate and leverage right off the bat. And you can see we also have images for other OSs. So not just Windows, but SUSE Slash, Ubuntu, Red Hat, RHEL. All those different versions are here for you to easily deploy a pre-installed image like Bob talked about closer to the beginning. So this is really awesome. And one other thing you can see is we talked about the different service tiers. So we'll go more into deployment in the next episode, but just wanted to show you, just like Bob did earlier, these different options you have under general purpose or business critical. And then we also talked a little bit how hyperscale is available only in Azure SQL database today. So these are kind of your options. This is kind of the unified experience that we're going for. So if we kind of take a step back and think about all the things that we've done, Bob, what do you think? Have we covered just so much? Do you think people are following? What's next? What's going on?
I think some people are watching and they really love the overview we provided, but they're also wondering, like, you know, are you guys going to get into some gnarly deep stuff? I can assure you.
Gnarly.
In the next modules, Anna, as we built this, we're like, Bob, I think we're going too deep. So we are going to get deep as we move into the meat and potatoes of SQL Server. But think about what we talked about. I mean, I'm biased. I think Azure SQL is the world's database. I mean, think of the options you have to put things in a virtual machine, in a managed instance, and an Azure SQL database. And what we're going to show you in the next few weeks, how easy it is to deploy this, how to configure it, how to secure it, make it fast, make it available. The built-in capabilities we're going to show you, I think, makes it that. But we have these options for you. You want a VM? We'll put it in a VM. We'll give you some extra on top of it to run in Azure, right? Remember, you're in a VM in Azure, so you just built in availability of the VM because you're in Azure. But you want a managed instance to get that built-in availability? We're going to give it to you. You want a database to go to hyperscale? You have that as well. You want to just lift and shift? Again, you can take Azure Migrate and take a VHD image from VMware or Hyper-V and just put it into the cloud. You want an instant to get that power of PaaS? Remember, the best of SQL Server, the managed service, that's managed instances. And then if you have a modern developer right now and you have a modern app and you just want to deploy a database and you want this thing to auto scale or pause when you need it or scale up to 100 terabytes when you need it, Azure Database is definitely the platform for you. So I think about all these choices we have, Anna, now today. The intention we both had was to make sure people walked away from today's session and know what's possible with Azure SQL and then join us in this journey over the next 5 weeks to find out, what do I do next and how do I use it?
Yeah, and we do have a whole journey ahead of us. I think, Bob, you mentioned it quite well, saying you know, that this is really just the beginning. We're going to get really deep. So if this was an overview, something you were already familiar with, you know, you're definitely going to want to join, because we're going to go into some stuff you probably didn't even know existed in Azure SQL today. Now,
lots of demos coming up in the next ones, right?
Lots of demos. We have so many demos. So we're really excited to share them with you all. And if you want to check out some resources in the meantime, of course, that Forest resource is going to be for this learning path. So if you want to start getting hands-on, reviewing the modules, then you can check it out at that first link. If you want the slides that we're using, a lot of people ask for our slides. We actually host those on GitHub, so you're able to take them. You can take that at the second link, SQL Workshops. What else? Shameless plugs for other series that Bob and I do. One is Azure SQL for Beginners. So if there's something small you want to revisit, this was a 61 video series that Bob and I recorded that takes you bit by bit through the Azure SQL fundamentals content. And then another shameless plug for Data Exposed. If you like these live stream sort of things, we're actually streaming on Wednesday. Bob, you're coming on the show on Wednesday.
Well, thanks for the notice.
Yeah, I'll be there. On Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, please join us on Data Exposed Live. And we also release recorded episodes on Thursday. You can find those on our YouTube channel. We have some books too, because doing live videos and stuff isn't enough for us. We have to go write some books. Bob wrote a book last year called Azure SQL Revealed, which follows pretty closely with this journey, but it dives deeper into some of the extra stories and hidden gems that Bob has found in his research and his just career. And then we also have another book written by myself and several other Azure SQL program managers about practical Azure SQL database for modern developers. So this book is more geared towards folks who might be new to Azure SQL database or are developer heavy. So definitely check out both those books. They're really, really great resources. I read them both to help myself, even though I was involved in some of them. Again, if you want to access this module from Learn Today, you can head to this AKA link, Learn Intro Azure SQL. Again, it's part of this whole Azure SQL fundamentals learning path. And Bob, that's not all, is it?
Yeah, I just want to add one other thing that, honestly, it wasn't even intentional for us. I can't tell how many people that have gone through Azure SQL fundamentals or are going to go through the series that you're going to go through the next 6 weeks and literally just pass the DP300 exam. I mean, I'm talking like a lot of people have contacted me and said like, hey, just pass the exam. I just did your stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's actually pretty amazing. So if that's your thing and you want it and you need to pass that exam, it's part of your journey, please, this content can help you do that.
Awesome. Thanks, Bob. And, you know, just stick around with us. You see the dates there, but really we're here at the same place, same time every Monday for the next 5 Mondays. So go ahead and mark your calendars. Be sure to join us. I'm just taking a quick look at the question. We have about 2 minutes left. Let's see. Maybe this is a good one to end on, Bob. I'm going to throw see what you think. This person says, which approach would you take in a scenario where you're running a Kubernetes cluster hosting multiple microservices where some of them depend on SQL database? Would you host the SQL server in a container or use Azure SQL database? So this is kind of a tricky what to use when.
Well, you know, you take something like Azure Kubernetes Service, that provides a lot of platform as a service-like capabilities for Kubernetes, and a SQL Server container runs a greater than environment. But you're not going to get built-in availability groups, okay? You're not going to get serverless scaling. So if you need a lot of these PaaS capabilities that we provide, Azure SQL Database is going to be a better offering for you, like a versionless SQL Server, where a SQL Server container doesn't do that. But hey, Kubernetes has built-in basic availability, like a failover cluster instance, and a SQL Server container runs really well in there. It's really great for DevOps scenarios. So a lot of people that choose Kubernetes versus using a PaaS service, but again, remember, PaaS gives you that ultimate built-in platform capabilities. So that is going to be, what does that person say? It depends. But think of the container more of like your infrastructure service type capabilities, because again, it is just SQL Server running a container, which is going to be kind of like running in a virtual machine like IaaS.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Bob. Thank you everyone so much for joining us today. Be sure to join us next week, same place, same time, like, comment, subscribe, all that stuff. And we hope to see you next week on Learn Live.
Bye everybody.